Water, Wisconsin, and the Mercury Cycle, a production of the University of Wisconsin Water Resources Institute, with funding provided by the United States Geological Survey. Mercury 2014, solving an ocean riddle. Welcome back. In the few short years since this series was first produced, many advances have taken place in mercury research and mercury policy. Happily, all the news is good, and this podcast is the first of two updates, which will share with you the latest information from the front lines of the international effort to both understand the chimerical element we know as mercury and to control its adverse effects. Today we head to Middleton, Wisconsin, where I was able to speak with a scientist who seems to consistently be at the bleeding edge of mercury research, Dr. David Krabbenhoft. One of the things I was most curious about was an issue which was still very much up in the air when the series left off, namely, how mercury methylation was occurring in the deep oceans. David is one of the researchers who contributed significantly to solving this oceanic riddle, so I felt that I had come to the right source. It's January 2014, and it's colder than I can politely describe, but I'm at the Wisconsin Water Science Center, and I have hot and breaking news about mercury. And I'm with David Krabbenhoft, and he's going to tell me all about some of the latest breakthroughs happening in the field of mercury research.
I think there's several new areas of mercury research that are worth noting and that have happened in the last 5 years. As recently as about 10 years ago, there was a remaining confounding observation in the mercury research community. A significant portion of marine fish caught around the world were above what's considered a safe consumption level. And yet, when we took ocean samples, we couldn't even detect methylmercury in the water that they were swimming in. That caused us great concern because how can we ever understand where those ocean fish get their mercury and help point to a solution if we can't even measure it? Well, about 8 or so years ago, we started to develop improved analytical methods for measuring methylmercury in marine waters. And those advancements were substantial enough that it allowed for the quantification of methylmercury at much lower levels and allowed us to see areas within oceans that are higher versus lower in methylmercury concentration. And the reason that's important is generally if you get to a location in the ocean that is a higher concentration, that points you to the source. And what we noted when we had a really nice opportunity to collect samples in partnership with Dr. Bill Landing from Florida State University, who was on an ocean cruise going from Tahiti all the way to Alaska, he offered to collect samples if we could analyze them. And I jumped at the opportunity, and we saw a really consistent pattern in the samples that he collected for us. Specifically, what we saw is that at a region in the ocean that's called the thermocline, and that's somewhere in the region of about, at the deepest, about 500 meters below the surface of the ocean, and shallowest to maybe about 100 meters, that's the region where the temperature rapidly cools from the warm water on top to colder temperature in the bottom. And it's the same structure that you see in an inland lake where you get warm water sitting on top of cold water during the summertime. Right below that layer is where we saw buildup of methylmercury. We've continued those sampling efforts in several other ocean basins across the world, most recently completing a longitudinal sampling of the Atlantic Ocean from Iceland all the way down to about 30 degrees south of the equator in the Atlantic Ocean. Previous to that, we conducted sampling in the Antarctic Ocean and the Indian Ocean. And so now we have data from across the world that encompasses a significant amount of the global ocean. And we see a very consistent trend. Everywhere we go, we see that same trend. The magnitude of the trend can be variable, but overall, we see maximum methylmercury concentration in the ocean water right below the thermocline. And we ask ourselves, well, why is that? What causes that phenomenon? Because it looks like then it's getting produced there. And what we discovered, the more we studied it, is that this area of the ocean, this part where you get rapidly cooling water, as the water cools, the ocean water gets more dense. And this is an area then, as particles from the surface of the ocean are settling deeper into the ocean, those particles, and what those particles are just decaying algae. Those algae are just barely more dense than water. So they just slowly, slowly drift downward. And when they hit that area of the thermocline where the water gets colder, water has a physical property that it's more dense when it's cold than when it's warm. So those particles become neutrally buoyant and they get hung up because the water gets dense. And so those particles just sit there. This becomes an area then of intensified microbial activity, because those particles are essentially energy or food to microbes who need fresh organic carbon for them to conduct their metabolic processes. One of the metabolic processes that's going on in this region of the ocean is the decomposition of organic matter, and that decomposition by microbial communities in that zone is the primary reason you see methylmercury getting produced. The zone where the algae settle to and become enriched in methylmercury is the bottom of the food chain for the ocean. That small amount of methylmercury that gets stuck to an algal cell gets consumed by the next level up the food chain, which is a group of animals called zooplankton. Those zooplankton are then about 50% more enriched in methylmercury than the algae. And those zooplankton are a food item for small fish in the ocean, something like an anchovy or a sardine swimming around. So those small little fish like that we call forage fish eat zooplankton. And then the sardines and the anchovies and those small fish become a prey item for the next larger set of fish swimming in the ocean. And eventually, all the way top of the food chain are the large tuna and other predaceous fish or whales, such as an orca swimming around in the ocean. Those fish, while not seemingly logically tied to that depth of methylmercury production in the ocean, are through the chain of events of bioaccumulation throughout the food web. And as we look back in our understanding of mercury in inland lakes on the continents, we see exactly the same thing, where in the thermocline zone of a small inland lake, we would commonly see a buildup of methylmercury in the water column there. It's just that nobody really thought that the process that was happening on a small inland freshwater lake could be happening at the scale of something as large as the Pacific Ocean. And in fact, it appears that that's the case. One of the good news things about that is that while 100 meters or 500 meters sounds like a phenomenal depth, in reality, that's just the surface skin of the ocean. That's a very, very shallow depth by ocean standards. What that has meaning for as a mercury researcher is that the mercury in that zone of the ocean has not been in the ocean very long at all, at most maybe a couple decades. So whereas before, mercury researchers used to hypothesize that the oceans would be the very last system to respond to a change in mercury emissions through negotiations and regulations across the world, like the UNEP rule or the MATS rule, large water bodies like global oceans will in fact respond at much shorter timescales than we previously thought were reasonable. The global oceans may in fact respond a lot quicker than smaller inland water bodies. And so we continue that push to further understand it. We're developing integrated models that will include our data from across all the oceans that we've been sampling, and hopefully provide a tool that will produce a model that can help us to predict what future mercury levels in ocean fish might be, so we can have an understanding of what the improvements to fish mercury levels will be under both the MATS rule and the Minamata Convention. But also, we're hopeful that other countries across the world will follow the U.S.'s lead on making national regulations for reducing mercury emissions to the atmosphere.
No doubt you heard David Krabbenhoff just now referring to the MATS rule and the Minamata Convention. Have no fear, these encouraging new steps in governmental policy will be explained fully in the next podcast, as David and I return to give you further updates from the field of Mercury research. It's definitely thought-provoking, and you won't want to miss it. As always, this is Chris Bocast. Till next time. Water, Wisconsin, and the Mercury Cycle is a production of the University of Wisconsin Water Resources Institute, with funding provided by the United States Geological Survey. This podcast is public domain. Thanks for listening.